The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I am here at Flat Rock Cellars, early morning. It is just gorgeous. I mean, this is a postcard. This is almost a stereotype for what you want from wine tourism. I am sitting with the president of Flat Rock Cellars. It is Ed Manranich. Ed, we practiced me saying your name. I still screwed it up.
It's all good. It's all good. Madronich, you're wowed by the view, right? Like that's
exactly. The audience needs to know. We were talking about this like 10 seconds earlier. I wrote it out phonetically. I'm like, I'm still going to screw it up. And I did.
You got Ed right.
I got the Ed right. Yeah.
No problem.
I got Ed and then Junior. It was the part in the middle. That's the one that That's the one that screwed it up for me. Let's just start here. Where are we sitting right now for this interview?
Well, you're sitting, for me, right at the crest of the escarpment and looking out over our vineyard. We look straight across to Toronto. We can see the CN Tower, the Sky Dome, beautiful morning. And we're sitting in a new space here at the winery. We call the observatory, but floor-to-ceiling windows that take advantage of this absolutely stunning view.
It really is. How different is wine tourism for you now versus, and we're going to be talking about your Twisted line of wines, your white, rosé, red, I believe sparkling, your blended wines, and it's its 20th anniversary. How different is wine tourism in this area today versus 20 years ago?
I think the biggest difference is the knowledge set of the customer. I think 20 years ago, we were at the early stages of developing a wine culture here in Ontario. And I think over the last 20 years, it's our customers that have become much more wine aware, much more wine knowledgeable. And as a result, it allows us or forces us to elevate our game. And what is really interesting for me is before we did this renovation here at the winery, we went to California thinking, oh my God, California is going to be the epicenter of the carnival circus of wine, Napa, Sonoma, and you're just going to go there and they're going to have all the new tricks and crazy stuff. And when we went there, what we realized was it was all about the wine. There wasn't a lot of showy stuff. There's a couple places, but it was really every place we went to was a focus on the wine. And so for me, wine tourism now is really about the wine, is really about celebrating the wine and celebrating what we can do here in Ontario.
One thing I love, it's funny, I sent a whole bunch of questions for this interview and now I'm going in a completely different direction. What I love when I hang out here and I have family that lives very close, I'm a 4-minute drive from here, is sometimes like when the end of the show, depending on what I feel like, I'll go to that vineyard. Like, oh, okay, I'm feeling like a Riesling. Well, maybe I'll come to Flat Rock or Sue Ann Staff, or I'm feeling like Syrah. Oh, I'm going to go by Creekside, or I'm feeling like Pinot. Hell, I could come here. I want to talk about you. Or I'll go to Westcott. Like, it's one of the great things that people need to know is that you can almost go one-stop shopping to all these different vineyards that are within a couple kilometers.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what that speaks to is each individual winery is finding their feet, right? And they find out what they're passionate about, because that to me is super important here at Flat Rock Cellars. They find out what they can do really well. It allows our customers to find where they best fit in. So if there's, call it 100 or whatever wineries down here in Niagara, there's something for everyone. And the joy is the exploration of finding those great places that you resonate with.
Yeah. What's your American base now? And how different is that? I imagine years ago, I would imagine there was a lot of surprised Americans trying, especially the Niagara red wines.
Yeah, I think the American, we've gone in waves, I think, with American tourism, right? COVID really, I think, hurt us, right? And it obviously restricted a lot of travel. It took several years for Americans. They're slowly starting to come back. What's interesting about the American customer is very, very different than the Canadian customer. And I don't want to be critical of either one.
I will say I'm going to give you cover on the front end. We're going to talk obviously a little bit in generalizations.
Yep.
It does not fit everyone. There's no such thing as 100%. But as someone who's encountered customers from Canada and the United States, you probably noticed some differences.
100%. So to me, the American customer is ruthless in finding what they want. They don't care about preconceived notions. They come in, yeah, I like sweet wine, I want sweet wine. And they're just very focused and comfortable with what they want. Where the Canadian customer is much more about the image around wine. Oh, I'm supposed to like un-oak Chardonnay, not oak Chardonnay. Or, you know, sweet wines are for the neophytes of wine. I shouldn't like sweet wines. They're much more, I want to say, socially conscious in the sense that what are the norms that they're supposed to follow? Where Americans, they don't care.
Right.
And so they're very different customers in that sense.
I think I prefer the American way of those two.
I'm a believer in drink what you want.
Yeah.
I think too often, I call it drinking with our eyes. I think most customers, and what I mean by that is most customers, they see a price and they put that's the quality of the wine. They see a region or a brand or a winery or a score, and that's what determines how much they like it, right? And that to me is you're visually looking at a cue that tells you what the quality of, what you think that quality of wine should therefore be, and therefore that's what you think the quality of that wine is. Where I always say to people, close your eyes, don't drink with your eyes, taste the wine. If you like it, drink it with your heart. Let your heart decide if you want to drink more of it, and don't go with your eyes, right? Go with your heart. And it's a hard thing to do, but it's the most important thing to do with wine.
You're 100% right. And the interesting thing, and I guess it's more of a Canadian thing, maybe it's an insecurity, because there's the generalization, Americans are just, you know, they're more sure about themselves, more cocksure, whatever you want. And again, it's all generalizations. But I think maybe as Canadians, we want to believe we're a certain type of person. And it's the stereotype of, if I like oak Chardonnay, what does that say about me? But if I like un-oak Chardonnay, it means I have a little bit more sophistication and I don't need a big oaky thing, which screams I'm someone who wants to eat a Mars bar in the morning or something. Like, I wonder if that's part of it.
Yeah, look, I think it's a real cultural thing as Canadians, right? You know, and I'll liken it to Toronto always wants to compare itself to other great cities of the world. Oh, we're like New York, we're like Paris. We're like, no, it's Toronto. Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares what New York, who cares what Paris does? Toronto is a great city in its own right, yet we are constantly trying to compare ourselves because of a little bit, you know, it might be a little bit of humbleness. We like to, as Canadians, I think we're humble and we like that, a little bit of humbleness. It's a little bit of insecurity, right? Are we, you know, we're always the small guy, the underdog on the block. So I think it's a bit of that. But yeah, when it comes to wine, you know, to me, when people come to Flat Rock Cellars, it's about breaking down the barriers to wine, because I think wine has historically created these barriers, and trying to allow people to just drink what they love, right? I'm never offended if somebody comes to Flat Rock and they said, you know what, this wine doesn't work for me. And I'm like, that's fine. Let's find one that does work for you. We all taste differently, right? If all you like is Australian Shiraz, you're probably not going to like my wine, because we're not in Australia and I don't do Shiraz, right? So...
yeah, and if you only like Australian Shiraz, I don't think you're going to like any. Actually, I don't think you'd like any of the Syrahs in Ontario.
No. And look, there might be one person out there that only likes Australian Shiraz, but the point being is, you know, we make a certain style of wine here, and we should be embracing the style, not trying to make the style of other regions.
Well, speaking of style, let's talk about it's the 20th anniversary. What do people need to know about the Twisted line of wines? And there's a lot of angles here in terms of there's sometimes going back to perception, there can be negative perception about blends, which is odd because that's all that Bordeaux does.
Yeah.
Curious about the line.
You know, to me, that's a great question, because when we started Twisted was sort of the first kind of blended wine with a cool, funky name in Ontario. And then, so we love being pioneers here at Flat Rock Cellars. And then a lot of people started copying it. When we did it, the whole principle behind Twisted was to blend varieties that we have here at Flat Rock Cellars to elevate the wine, to celebrate the individual components of each one, so Riesling, Gewürztraminer, and Chardonnay. And when you taste Twisted, you know there's Riesling in there. You can taste Riesling. Really, the nose is where the Gewürz really comes out. And the Chardonnay is for me, is mostly on the finish. It's nice and round and soft. So these three varieties come together to create a wine, in my opinion, that's greater than the individual parts. And that is the whole concept of Bordeaux, of, quite frankly, the Rhone in many respects.
Yep.
Even Australian Shiraz, which we were just talking about, usually has 5% Viognier in it, right? And so blended wines, you know, I would argue, when done really well, elevate each of the individual varieties. And that was always the principle behind Twisted, to make an awesome wine. It wasn't about, you know, going down to the bottom and just putting stuff together and putting a funky name on it. That, unfortunately, is what happened. You know, and if I look back at the last 20 years of Twisted, we launched Twisted, great success. People started copying, but it was a copy that was more, you know, we're going to take our, you know, whatever's left over.
Right.
We're going to put it in and we're going to put a funky name on it, which to me diminished what could have been an unbelievably, which is, I'll say still is, an unbelievably great wine, which is taking different components and putting them together to make an even better wine. And so for me, what I want to celebrate with Twisted is creating blends that are greater than the individual parts. And that has always been at the heart of Twisted. It's never been, you know, a race to the bottom to blend off stuff. It's always been a race to elevate the wine and make an amazing tasting wine.
It's kind of the theme of this interview so far, is it's about perception versus reality. Like, you perceive yourself as, I need to only drink Burgundian Pinot, but you find out actually, no, I kind of like Oregon or whatever. It's same thing here. The perception is, oh, this is just the dregs at the bottom. We'll make this for a stew on Sunday night from the great meal we had on Saturday, but that's not the case at all here.
Yeah, no, it's not. And I love that we're talking about perceptions, because that to me is the perception. You know, I'll add Ontario into the mix.
Oh yeah.
Right? The whole perception of what we do here in Ontario. I just laugh because when people, you know, I see it all the time, still to this day, you know, we can do a blind tasting and the favorite wine in the blind tasting is the Ontario wine. But once it's revealed, you know, people will make excuses for why they preferred the Ontario wine. And the reality is yes, whatever our history is, this place, the soil that we have, the climate that we have, I'll argue is better than anywhere else in the world to make wine. And if you look at the science behind it, you look at our climate facts, our average monthly temperature, our rainfall, our growing degree days, we are better than most places in the world. Like, we have more growing degree days than Napa Valley, like just as one climate facts, right? All the great places in the world want to talk about limestone soil. We're right on the Niagara Escarpment. If you passed your grade 9 geography, you know that we're full of limestone, right? You know, wine is soil and climate. That's it. There's nothing else that makes great wine. When you look at the facts about what we have here, we have an unbelievable place to make great wine. But people's perceptions are historic. They don't necessarily recognize how special this place is.
I forget the line of wines here, so forgive me. I last time I came by, I grabbed like a 2015 Pinot, which, by the way, good on you guys. You're selling, you get the library wines, you're selling them.
100%, yeah.
Is it the Gravity?
It might have been the Gravity. So it's Gravity. So just to take you through our wines. Yeah. So we have what we call our Capstone series. So those are our top wines. It's our Gravity Pinot Noir, it's our Rusty Shed Chardonnay, and it's our Nadja's Vineyard Riesling.
Yeah.
So we do those three varieties, Chard, Pinot, Riesling here at Flat Rock Cellars. Then we have what we call our foundation series. It's our core. It's the great value, unbelievable quality, all hand-picked, hand-sorted, gravity-fed fruit. So unbelievable value. Chard, Pinot, Riesling again. We'll do an oak chard and an un-oak chard in that lineup. And then we have our Twisted lineup, which is our blended wines. And again, it's to elevate those varieties. And it's really to celebrate what we can do from a blended perspective here in Ontario.
So yeah, it was the Gravity. And the point that we're going to go back to Twisted is the I grabbed a bottle of the 2015 Gravity Pinot and just, you know, opened it for like an hour or so, then decanted for a little bit. And it was so good. And if you closed your eyes, you would have felt like you were some in the middle of Burgundy. And the thing is, but it still tasted Canadian, but like just the quality, the depth, the linger, the finish, the everything you want. I'm like, this is a wine I could blind And so many people would assume $189 from Shepherd Tan or something.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, one of the things we do here at Flat Rock Cellars is we try and measure ourselves, not against our colleagues in the industry, because I love to celebrate what my colleagues are doing here. Everybody does something a little bit different, and we want to celebrate those great things that we're doing here in Ontario. But for me, it's much more about how do we compare internationally. And so the wine that you're talking about is the 2015 Gravity. That was 92 points in Wine Spectator. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, sent down to the biggest wine publication in, and now I'm being very, very Canadian, right? Trying to get recognition internationally. But, you know, it was the highest rated Canadian wine in that tasting. They tasted 400 Canadian wines, BC and Ontario. Only 20 made it into the publication, into the write-up at the back. Five of them were Flat Rock Cellars, and that wine you're speaking about, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. But that's what we do at Flat Rock. Of the and one of the five wines of the 20 Canadian wines that were in there, five again were Flat Rock. That was a 92 point, the highest scoring red wine from Ontario in the Wine Spectator. And that's what we do internationally, right? That is, you know, and you look at the price, I remember it was in the California Cab edition, and the number of California cabs that were rated 92 or less that were over $100 was astronomical, right? It was hundreds of them. And that just says what we do. Like, it's a 92 point wine for $35.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm thinking if your cash register is open when this is done, I might want to grab a bottle. All right, one more thing, then we're going back to Twisted, because I got a bunch of Twisted questions for you, but we're here now, and I know we try to fight it. It's like, oh, Canadians, we've got to stop doing this about trying to compare ourselves to America or Europe. But from an economic basis, from a sales basis, it is important because it's part of the business. It goes back to perception. Steve Spurrier, Decanter, this is a couple of years, obviously a while ago, you know, he talked about, I'd select Flat Rock Cellars for Super Pinot and Riesling as well as Chardonnay. And one of your Rieslings, you know, made it best in show at the 2022 Decanter World Wine Awards, which is a long way of me asking the question, which is, how important is it, Wine Spectator, but also for someone like Decanter, to get that sort of very positive recognition?
I think it is critical to get to combat those perceptions, right? But it also speaks to the direction we're going, right? Each year, our scores get better and better because we are getting better and better at what we do. Our vineyard's getting older and older and more mature. You know, when we get an award like Best in Show. So this is Best in Show, 97 points, went through three separate blind tasting panels before it was awarded Best in Show in the biggest wine competition in the world, right? That is a pretty powerful recognition for what this vineyard can do, for what the winemaking team here can do. That is really, really important to us. And I just want to talk about the Steven Spurrier thing, because this to me is, it's not only that we're making 97 point wines, but the price of those 97 point wines, it delivers unbelievable value. Like, so often we hear, you know, somebody say, oh, but I can buy this $8 wine from California or something, right? And we're not comparing apples to apples. What we're doing is, like you mentioned, we are doing Givry Chambertin, which cost $150 a bottle to start, right?
And that's
the and that's the quality that we're doing. So you can buy us for $30, or you can buy Givry Chambertin for $150, and that's the comparison that I really believe that should be made for what we're doing here. So it is really important. I remember the Steven Spurrier. So Steven Spurrier, an iconic legend in the wine industry, and I'll say revolutionized wine when he did the Judgment of Paris, and he opened the floodgates for wines from anywhere other than France to be recognized, or anywhere other than the old world to be recognized as potentially great. And when he came here, I remember it was the first time I came to Ontario. We went into the barrel cellar, and I could see it on his face. First time tasting Ontario wines, he tastes my Pinot Noir, and on his face you could see it was like, oh my God, I can't believe how good this is. And we went upstairs, so we tasted out of barrel, and we go upstairs, we're tasting wine out of bottle, and he asked me, Ed, what's the price? I said, Steven, how about you taste the wine first, and then I'll tell you the price.
Right, smart.
So we go through, we taste the wines, and he goes, wow, these wines are unbelievable. I love these wines. These are incredible. And he goes, okay, so now tell me what the price is. And I told him the price, and he goes, that's insane consumer pricing. It's almost like you're giving it away. Like, that is unbelievable value. And he goes, that's what I'd love to see from wineries, over-delivering on value. And that's why he spoke, and he said he would recommend our, like, he's writing in the Decanter magazine that he would recommend our wines, which is a really powerful tool.
Yeah, it is. It's great for you. It's great for the whole region because then it brings more people here. They're exploring Flat Rock and then they're like, oh, what's that place Westcott over there? Let me go there. And then you try somewhere else and it just kind of helps to raise everyone.
Elevates us all, right? Yeah. I think, and when one has success, it's, you know, rising tide floats all boats.
When you're making the Twisted, finally got back there.
Great.
Yeah. How much of it is art? How much of it is science when it depends? Like for the white, the Gewurztraminer, the Riesling, and the Chardonnay?
It's both. You know, it's not one or the other. I think there's a lot of science in it, right? There's a lot. And when I say science, it's what are we doing out in the vineyard? How are we managing the vineyard? How are we getting the best fruit out of the vineyard, right? Are we doing all the proper techniques? Are we analyzing it? Are we doing all of these things properly so we can make the best possible wine? Making a great bottle of wine isn't about doing one thing well. It's about doing a whole bunch of little things along the way. And those tend to be very scientific, very process driven. But at the end of the day, we rely on our taste buds. We have a number of different tanks of Chard, Pinot, Riesling, and we're going to taste them and we're going to start blending them together. And it's like a painter with a palette. If we've got 10 tanks of different wines, you have 10 different colors. And you take those 10 different colors and you put them together in a whole bunch of different ways to see where you land. And now it's your expertise and your taste. It's that artistic bent that the winemaker has to be able to land on the final canvas. And so a lot of science, but finish it with a lot of art and flair.
How many people are in the decision-making process for deciding the percentages?
So the final decision rests with the winemaker. I think there's some of, like we do this, it's kind of fun, not kind of fun, it is fun. We sit down and we taste through all the possible components and we sort of talk about what we want to see and what the blend is. But at the end of the day, it's got to be one person has to make the final decision, right? I always like to say, they don't build statues to committees, right? Whenever you see a statue, it's one person, right? Yeah. Rarely do you ever see a statue to a committee. And so it rests in the winemaker. And, you know, that's how it lands, right?
Over the 20 years, has there been any memorable bickering, fights, debates about the percentages?
No, we don't. It's not there's not a right or wrong on it, right? So it's not like, oh my God, you can't do this and this is way up. We provided the, you know, when we're doing the tasting, it's me, winemaker, assistant winemaker, our consultant, so sort of four of us sitting down going through the tasting. It's more about advice. It's more about, you know, I think this, I think that, you know, consider this, right? Like, see how this element works in here. It's more about advice than anything.
And what's let's go to the pink and the red. What are the varietals for those?
What we do, what's great about Twisted is we always use fruit from our vineyard, but it allows us to reach out and grab what other things Ontario does well, mm-hmm. and bring them into the mix.
Right.
So it can be different every year. So red has included Cab Franc, which is a great variety. We work with some great growers. You can have Cab Franc, you can have Merlot and Gamay in it, would be other varieties along with our Pinot Noir. And the rosé, often driven obviously by Pinot Noir, but could have Gamay, but also has some white varieties in it. We'll put Gewurz and some of our Gewurz and some of our Riesling in it, and those tend to be the varieties. And we're forgetting our Sparkling Twisted. We have a Sparkling Twisted as well,
yep,
which again is driven by our core white varieties, Chard, Riesling, and Gewurztraminer.
What appellation are we in here?
We are in the 20 Mile Bench.
20 Mile Bench. Right. I ask this because if you are if you're grabbing some of your reds that you mentioned, like Cab Franc or Merlot, you guys don't specialize that here. No. On your site.
No.
And is there appellations that you like? It's like, okay, if I'm going to get my Cab Franc, I want to go here, but my Merlot, maybe I'm closer to Niagara-on-the-Lake. Like, I'm wondering, is there geographical preferences for the varietals?
So it's a great question, right? And I think I'll first say love the bench. Right. So
yeah.
for anybody who doesn't know what I mean when I talk about the benches, in the Niagara Peninsula, there's the strip of the Niagara Escarpment, and right on that strip, on the actual Niagara Escarpment, between the bottom of the Niagara Escarpment and the top of the Niagara Escarpment, is what we refer to as the bench. And I love the fruit that we get from the bench. Chard, Pinot, Riesling first and foremost,
yep,
but also Cab Franc. Niagara-on-the-Lake. So when people think about the Niagara Peninsula, they often think about Niagara-on-the-Lake, right down, you know, the old town where I'll say the the start, the Inniskillen, who I used to manage, start of the Ontario wine industry was, tends to be a warmer part of the peninsula. So some of those Bordeaux varieties, the Merlots, tend to get riper, and you would look to some of those places where we get. One of the things I would say is, and I'll speak to this, you know, to me, the 20 Mile Bench is a little wine geeky, right? Mm-hmm. It's you know, drilled down. It's a very small subset of what we do. You know, for me, you know, the easiest thing for me to say, if you say what appellation I'm in, most of the time I'm going to say Niagara Peninsula, because people understand where we are. They understand Niagara. They understand where we are. If you're wine involved, then we can drill down and get into the 20 Mile Bench.
Yeah, and that's I do that all the time on these podcasts, mostly because I want listeners to realize that within the larger one, there are smaller pockets, smaller appellations, and they bring different characteristics. That Merlot from Niagara-on-the-Lake is going to taste different than Merlot from where we're standing now. And I always find that's important, just so people realize that the level of quality that we produce here, that terroir means something.
100% terroir does. And one of the things that, you know, people, I now believe, but you know, you sometimes hear about like the stories in Burgundy and Bordeaux where, oh my God, you cross the road and it's, you know, this vineyard's way better than the one on the other side of the road. And you think, come on, how is that possible? And it's true. What's amazing, it is true.
It is.
And so when you're going 30 kilometers, it's going to make a difference, right? And the soil is different and the elevation is different and the drainage is different and, you know, the aspect, the angle of the land is different. And all of those things make a difference. And how it is exemplified here at Flat Rock Cellars is our two Rieslings. Our two Rieslings are from two different parts of the vineyard. And in the very first vintage where I had the two Rieslings, you know, we there wasn't a lot because it was the early parts of Flat Rock. And we were, the intent was sort of to put it all together so we'd have one Riesling. But what happened was is we had our Natchez Vineyard up on top, which is a higher elevation, very, very thin layer on really hard dolomitic limestone. And we had our other Riesling that was on softer limestone, a little bit thicker layer of soil, but a warmer part of the vineyard. And every time we looked to blend them together, it never made a better wine than the individual ones.
Right.
And from the first day, we've always kept them separate. So we have a Natchez Vineyard Riesling and we have our Foundation Riesling, and they're just two parts of the vineyard. And you know, you're sitting here, you can see the Foundation Riesling, it's a couple hundred meters away.
Yep.
And Natchez, you drove by on your way in.
Yeah.
It's a couple hundred, you know, it's up here, and the wines are completely different.
Yeah, see, I love that. What I love about that story is I always appreciate hyper-specific examples. So it's 500 feet apart, and the Natchez one is the one that, you know, was best in show in decanter, and it's nothing against the other one because the other one is one of the foundational wines of all of Flat Rock.
Yeah, but and interesting, to me, I never feel better or worse. They're different. And
yeah.
Natchez Vineyard won best in show, 97 points, but our Foundation Riesling also won best wine in Canada twice, right, at the Canadian Wine Awards. So, you know, it's just interesting.
What would you recommend for your twisted wines? What would you recommend in terms of the when and what to eat with them?
So what I love about our twisted wines is they're very versatile, right? They're with blended wines, they tend to have great balance, and we're really trying to make those wines great on their own, right? I just as a little anecdote, a really important customer of ours, you know, they're trying to figure out their wine list. They went in and did a tasting of a whole bunch of Ontario wines, and the best top scoring wine was our White Twisted, right? Mm-hmm. The sommelier said to me, you know what, just that little bit of residual sugar provides a balance that allows that wine to show through. So great on their own. I always call, I never give tasting notes, but with that wine, my tasting note is yummy.
Mm-hmm.
But again, but if we get into the specific stuff, for me, it's always lighter things or spicier things, right? So fishes and chicken and things, great, but also spicier dishes, right? There's that little bit of residual sugar, but also a nice backbone of acidity, which allows it to go through. But, you know, for me, flexibility would be a key.
Now, this one you might not have an answer for, and it's fine because you were talking about you don't like giving tasting notes. Do you have any in your head of the weirdest, craziest, dumbest, strangest tasting notes you've ever heard from either customers, restaurant owners, sommeliers, someone visiting from Buffalo?
I'll say I probably do, but I off the top of my head, there's one that's like on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember it. But yeah. I will tell a true story for me around tasting notes. And it's why I don't give tasting notes anymore and why we don't put tasting notes on our back label. When I was managing in Enniskillen, my office was at the head office, which was in Mississauga, but I was managing in Enniskillen and I had to do the back label copy for the wines. And so I could drive all the way down to the winery in Niagara on the Lake, taste through the wines and drive all the way back. And I'm like, it's a Merlot. Mm-hmm. Hints of cedar, plum, and black cherry mingle with blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I made it up.
Yeah.
And I am sure that happens all the time in the wine industry. And so, you know, I'll say there's a little bit of bull in back label copy or tasting notes. Mm-hmm. I think people are trying to be flowery and come up with things that sound great and sexy and wonderful. But there, and the other reality is wines evolve over time. That 2015 mm-hmm. Gravity Pinot Noir you had tasted different when you tasted it than when I tasted it 4 years ago, right? The wine was a different wine because wines evolve and change over time. So doing a tasting note today is irrelevant in the future at some point.
Right. That's a good point on the label when you see like the taste notes on the label or stuff. Yeah, you're right. It is going to be different. Speaking of different, this is more of a, you know, I feel almost like a psychiatrist question, but how different are you now versus the first Twisted? Like just in terms of your life, like your perspective on wine and this industry. It's a big, heavy question. There's like, you know, there's 1,000 places you could go.
I'll say this is a tough business. And I'm less stressed, is what I would say. When we first started, you know, you're trying to find ways to engage the consumer and stuff. But mostly I'll say it's the farming aspect of the hardest part of this job is the farming side of it. Because we're at the mercy of Mother Nature. Mother Nature gives us, I've learned that there's nothing I can do. Mother Nature is giving us what she's going to give us. And we have to manage that. And as long as we figured out how to manage that, I'm less stressed about what's going to happen out in the vineyard because it has a huge implication on the finances of the company, right? If we have a tough, challenging crop or a tough winter where we don't have a lot of fruit the next year, those are things that, you know, early on really stressed me. Now they stress me a little bit less.
Nice. That's it just comes with time and just yep. time and wisdom. It's like so you sort of hinted at it, something I talk about, but why are the wines better now? And people will ask. I'm like, it's the most boring answer. Yeah. Vines got older, we got smarter.
That's exactly right.
That's it.
That's it. There's no magic thing to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So where can they find the wines? Where can they find the Twisted wines? Because again, it is, as you know, wait, before that, the question that I was going to ask, when this area got built, the observatory, was there stress there? Was there nerves there when all this was getting done?
No, it wasn't so much nerves. It was excitement. One of the great things about this new space. So we had up until we opened up this space very little hospitality space. I mentioned earlier about going to California and it being about the wine. I think what you see in this space is this amazing tasting room space, beautiful tables, chairs, and ability to bring in, you know, we brought Riedel glasses in. We just want to elevate that tasting experience. It was just a wonderful exercise. My architect who designed the original design of Flat Rock Cellars also did this. He's First Nations. Just a wonderful experience. We had a spirit circle that brought the whole team together to talk about what we wanted to see, how we wanted to do it, how it fits in with our setting, our scene. And I think one of the great things was just a joy and an excitement to be working through with this amazing vision by Brian, who's actually the architect on Parliament Hill right now.
Oh, okay.
Right? Which is kind of cool. Like Flat Rock was his first sort of signature piece. And there's no way I could afford him for this project or I could get him time. Yeah. But because this was his first signature architectural piece, there was no way he was going to let anybody else do it. Right. And so it's great to work with Brian. He's got a great vision that combines this First Nations sensibility with modern technology, and it was a real pleasure to work with him, and he created this amazing space without it looking like it was ever added. It feels like it's always been here.
The white, the red, the rosé, and the sparkling, the twisted, the 20th anniversary. Where can people find the wines?
You can get them at the LCBO, a great partner of ours. You can obviously get them here at the winery or flatrockcellars.com. And even Twisted will be now in grocery, and hopefully we'll see it in convenience as, you know, the province of Ontario is opening up sales. And what's kind of cool, and this will be my little Canadianism, we also sell around the world. Like, we sell in these weird places. We do really well in, like, Finland and Denmark and Japan. Like, you know, I don't know if it's the, you know, the northern part of the hemisphere that loves our wines, but it's kind of cool to be in these, I'll say, different places.
That must be a cool feeling. I imagine someone from, you know, the communication side of Flat Rock will show you photos that someone's thrown up on Instagram or Twitter of a bottle of your wine in some corner of the planet.
Yeah, no, it's one of the, we love getting those pictures when the wine is in these different places. And it's great to go, like, you know, the other thing is to go to these places and share our wine. It's always, the first thing is Canada. I didn't know you do wine. And then, wow, I can't believe how good this is. And then, wow, I can't believe how inexpensive this is. And that's the international, you know, the three things that every single time I taste my wine with an international person, that happens.
That's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah.
Ed, give the website one more time.
Flatrockcellars.com.
Very, very easy. And I can't recommend high enough. Come out here, try the wines. It's gorgeous. You're overlooking the lake. You're overlooking the vines. It is a beautiful spot. Ed, appreciate the time today.
No, I appreciate it, Matt. And I know you're looking across the lake to Toronto and dreading the drive home.
No, I'm staying here for a couple days.
Oh, perfect.
When I go back home, it's going to be the dead of night.
Perfect.
It's horrible. It's horrible getting to this city. Thanks again, Ed. And thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on iTunes, Apple, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.